Hey everybody, and we're back here in Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined as always on a Wednesday when we delve into the news, the tidbits, the shenanigans in the world of pro wrestling by Sondra. Hi Sondra, how are you? And happy 9 year staying married anniversary.
Yeah, thank you. Mr. Sondra and I have made it 9 years, which is, you know, crazy. It feels like a very long time. Yeah, when you say we're back on Inside the Ropes, I thought I was an interview guest for a second. I was like, ooh, I feel snazzy.
I also forgot, well, so there was a couple of delays to this week's interview cast that only went up today with Joe Hendry, and I'd like recorded the interview and I'd edited it, and I was like right about to, I'd put the music in at the beginning and the end, and I was just about to click publish, and I was like, oh, I've not done the fucking monologue thing. I was like, do you know what? People don't care about the monologue. So it's just gone out. It's just gone out as is.
Sometimes that needs to happen. You know what? Sometimes just throw caution to the wind, throw monologues to the wind, and just publish your content, you know?
It's not all about me.
Just what needs to happen. No. It's, you know, people are tuning in for you, but also to hear what Joe Hendry has to say, which I'm sure is lovely, and I will listen to it later today.
Yeah, it's a very good podcast. It's a kind of weird one because, like, because I'm friends with him, like, he's probably going to be on, like, once or twice a year anyway, but we just kind of talk about the UK scene and why he decided to lead Impact and a lot of cool stuff. So
well, he's a good guest to have right now because didn't he just leave Impact like last week or something?
Yeah.
He put that out?
He put out he'd left Impact, so I thought, well, this is the week to do it. So,
yeah.
But how have you been? Tell us about your anniversary.
I've been good. I'm real tired right now because I was up pretty late because I, you know, obviously I went out last night and then had to watch SmackDown after I got home. But no, we had a lovely anniversary, pretty low key, but we went out for Indian food, which was lovely and a very good decision. And I was super full. And then we saw Aquaman, which I thought was great. Like, I did not expect to enjoy Aquaman as much as I enjoyed Aquaman because I really hated Aquaman in Justice League. I thought he was just kind of a douche bro in that movie. But Aquaman was a lot of fun, and that made me happy as, you know, someone who is a fan of DC and wants their movies not to suck. So we had an excellent night, and then I came home and watched the wrestling. So that was about it.
There you go. I did question the decision of somebody who also, like me, suffers from stomach issues of getting an Indian, but you know, I'm glad that you persevered through.
You know what? There are precautions to take before eating Indian food. Like, as long as I have enough lactate in my system so that the dairy is not a problem, and as long as I don't overdo it, like if I get too full or something, then it can all go terribly, terribly wrong. But as long as, like, I know my limits, I know when I need to stop eating, I have the rest of my butter chicken and naan in the fridge currently, which I'm going to eat for breakfast after we're done recording here, and you know, it's good. I have a whole system. It's fine. And I'm used to Indian food too, because I, you know, I work for Indians, and when I work Sundays, they bring me food from temple, which is awesome. Like, it's a great benefit.
There you go. It's not all bad then.
Yeah. No, it's a good thing.
What's been going on with me? There is some stuff I can't talk about that, but there's Steve Gunn came up at the weekend.
Oh yeah. How was your weekend with Steve Gunn?
It was good. We made it official. Me and him.
Did you?
Yeah.
You didn't tell me this.
I know. And it's like
you sound so incredibly like happy and joyous that you're official with a boy.
I know, but it's like, you know. It's good. It's just, you know.
I know what you're like.
So anyway, so that happened, and then we went up to Arran on Friday, the Isle of Arran. Not up, across. We took a train, we took a boat. Here's the thing, ladies and gentlemen. So Steve Gunn had got me spectacular birthday presents. He got me an Apple TV, all this good stuff. So what we've learned is the balance of power had been transferred to him. So what this weekend was about was transferring that back to me. So, nice song and dance, but making it official. Got his favourite mac and cheese from the favourite place.
Whose idea was this to make it official?
Me. I asked. I did the
Did
asking.
you? Aww.
I did it in a nice way, which I won't go into. I got him his favorite mac and cheese that he likes from like a takeaway place, and then I had it in like baking dishes and I kept it hot till he got there, and it was like a whole like dinnery picnicky thing, and then we went and got ice cream for the dog, and then I took him on a surprise trip to Arran on the Friday, which was really to restore my power balance. So
Of course.
we got a train to Ardrossan, which is down by the beach, and then we got the boat over to Arran, and then we did what we like to do, which is basically eat and drink and be comfy. That's
I
pretty
mean, that's
much.
basically the best combination of things. Eating,
Yep.
drinking, and being comfy are all wonderful.
So like got to the hotel. See, you know how people like to go somewhere, like to explore. I don't want to explore. I want to explore my hotel room. Got a nice executive room, big room, was able to take my Apple TV and plug it in so we could watch the network and stuff on it. Had a bath, had a nap, had dinner in the restaurant. So we go and have dinner in the restaurant, right? And it's very nice. I had like fish and chips, and I had cheese and onion and potato croquettes. So basically, all that is good in a croquette. Two courses here, two courses, and then maybe like three other tables in the restaurant, and then we go to like to leave, and me of course being like, can I take these onion rings back up to my room? Because why am I going to leave perfectly good onion rings that are there just because I'm not
No,
a bit
always
full?
take them up to your room. Why would you not take them up to your
And
room?
as expected, I devoured them the next kind of hour or two. So we're about to leave. So this is the Isle of Arran, right? Quite well, not like a small place compared to like Glasgow or whatever. And the guys served us the whole meal, very, very, very nice. And then I said, can I take the onion rings up to the room? Yes, you can, no problem. I said, can I charge this to the room? Yeah, that's fine. And then I had to sign something to like say I wanted to charge it to the room. And as I'm signing it, he kind of takes it and she goes, just one other thing. I do have to ask, are you Kenny McIntosh from Inside the Ropes? I said, yes, I am. Yes, that's me.
I love when this happens in unexpected situations.
And
I love that
like,
you're on an island somewhere with your boy and someone recognizes you. Did he give you the appropriate amount of shit for getting recognized?
I looked over at him. He could not. He was beaming, Sandra. He was beaming
Aw,
with
he was
abs.
proud. He wasn't
No,
just
no, no, no,
laughing
no,
at you
no.
and
He
giving
was.
you shit.
No, he wasn't proud. He was delighted that I've now had that awkward exchange to have.
Because he knows the discomfort of you being recognized. He knows how much you hate this.
I don't hate it. I just no, like this guy was fine because he was nice about it. Like if you're
Right.
fine about it, I don't mind, obviously. It's the awkward ones, right? The awkward ones are the ones that I can't like. I will say this. I don't care what accusations people gave him, which true story one day maybe. But Adam Blompé, I've never met someone who can handle that awkward small talk better than him. Maybe Adam Pacitti, the two of them, I could see them standing with people for like 10, 15 minutes where there was nothing. And they would like ask the people how they are, they'd ask them about what's going on, talk to them about wrestling, and they would lead the whole conversation. That gives me an anxiety nightmare. An uncomfortable silence is my least favorite thing in the world.
I'm just one of those people where I'm like, if you start a conversation with me, that's cool, but like, you kind of need to have something else to say, you know? Because like, I am not necessarily going to just like stand there for 10 minutes. Or I'm the same way online. Like, if people message me online or whatever, and they're like, hey, how are you? And I'm like, oh, I'm good. How are you? Like, did you have a reason for messaging me? Or like, you're the one who started this conversation. I don't really know what my role is here.
This is true.
Because I'm bad at this.
Well, I mean, you're not as bad as me. But
True.
on the contrary, a comfortable silence is what you aspire to.
Yes. I'm a big
So
fan of a comfortable silence. I think
love
that's how I've been married for 9 years, is
it.
we're totally fine just not talking to each other from time to
I
time.
have seen you both be comfortably silent together.
Yeah, it's true.
So yes, we had the trip in Ireland, which was really good, and then it came back, and then it's my friend Neil's birthday, so we went out for pizza, and my friend Kate decided to get this like pizza that was gonna have like hamburger and mac and cheese and all this stuff on it. Here's the myth, right? Dispelled. Macaroni cheese pizza, while in your head sounds amazing, is fucking dreadful.
Is
because
it?
It's not macaroni. You can't put macaroni and cheese on a pizza. It doesn't work. You have to either put like a cheese sauce and then put some pasta on top of it. Because the way that pizza forms, it's just very difficult to do. You're wanting to
is
get
this
like,
mac and cheese like? Does it also have tomato sauce on it, or is it just like mac and cheese baked into a crust?
And this is like the base with a tomato base on as usual, and then like little bits of dry pasta. And with the cheese that's
no, I feel like you'd have to make the mac and cheese first, and then like you could put it on top of a pizza, but you couldn't like make the pizza and make mac and cheese simultaneously.
Exactly. So but she got that. So I mean, I knew the clusterfuck was coming, so I was just enjoying watching it. But then and then on Sunday we obviously watched the Elimination Chamber. I recorded the Elimination Chamber with Ollie and Jen. Steve Gunn was like, I'm just going to sit in the living room and watch the main event. Okay, fine. And then like 10 minutes into the main event, I went to get a drink. He'd passed out. Because he is a golden retriever.
I was wondering where he was during the reaction video.
Yeah, he was just... he walked into my bedroom and basically saw the porn set up and got very uncomfortable. So we do the recording. And we do it in the room at the back of my house so my fucking stupid fucktard neighbour doesn't get annoyed, even though she sings opera at 9 in the morning. That's apparently fine. I hate these people that because their schedule is 9 a.m, that's supposed to be mine as well.
Yeah, no, that is the absolute worst. Like, they started doing, like, some sort of maintenance in my hallway at, like, 8 a.m. the other day. And I was like, you understand I've been asleep for 3 hours. This is unacceptable.
How is 8 a.m. a time that is acceptable to anybody? Like, there should at least...
I don't know.
To me, it should be at least 10 a.m. 9 a.m. an absolute push, but 8 a.m. that's worth. And if anybody's ever got something to, like, you know, they're going to come fix something at your house, they always turn up at 8:01.
Right?
Oh.
Oh, it's the worst. It's like, no, if you tell me 8 a.m., I expect people to be late, like me, and then, you know, like, I'm still, I don't know, half dead, basically, when I roll out of bed, and I'm just like, why is this happening? I hate my life.
I know, it's the worst. So we record the reactions and everything, and I go to sleep, and I'm fine. I'm just like, waking up on the Monday, felt okay. Steve Gunn was dead because I'd broken him over the weekend with too much mac and cheese and drinks. So,
do you ever feed him anything other than mac and cheese?
Yes. He gets breakfast. Well, I mean, I did order us, like, hot-filled rolls on one of the mornings where it was, like, a fried egg and potato scone in a roll.
That sounds so good.
Mm-hmm. So, but I wake up on the Monday, and that's all fine. And then, like, he leaves on the Monday, and then I'm pottering about, and then the reactions video goes up, and it's all fine. And then I forget sometimes what's happened. So I forgot that I had put Jen in a Boston Crab.
That happened.
And I only found that out when a Twitter account, like Cultaholic Out of Context or something, posted it, and I was like, oh yeah, the Boston Crab. No memory.
That cracked me up. That I saw that before I saw the reaction video as a whole.
Sets you up, really.
Yeah, it really does. And I mean, I've hung out with you guys before. I've been put in sharpshooters by you before. This did not surprise me as an event that occurred. But I thought it was a pretty great Patreon plug.
I thought so. Hook them in with the Boston Crab, then direct to camera. It was funny, so Steve Gunn obviously hadn't been in the room when we were recording, so he was going to watch it later on. And Ollie was like, what did Steve think of the intros? And I started asking him.
The intros were so good.
And I said, what did you think of the intros? And he went, oh, they were hilarious. And then he said, however, that face, I will never be able to unsee. And then screenshotted that face of me, you know,
attempting to be a sexy man.
Trying to get people to come and help me turn it up.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody did, by the way. Nobody wanted to come let me turn it up for them. Not one
Well,
person.
They know you're a taken man now.
Well, they didn't at the time. There was still a small window. Nobody knows how it's working out.
Missed opportunities, everyone.
But the other thing was...
No, my favorite part of the intro was Jen, like, being... And Jen is, like, a very attractive woman. Like, she is. And her, like, trying to be sexy and then falling over immediately is probably the most Jen thing I've ever seen her do.
Of course. Well, because the thing is, we were like... Ollie showed me the porn setup, and I said, it'd be really funny if, like, we do, like, a kind of a, you know, webcam intro thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jen, like, without telling us she was going to say it on the first take, because obviously that was not the first take, that was like take 6. But like yeah. on the first take, she said, "Come and frog splash me." I was dead.
It was so funny.
And I was like, "You have to say that line now." Because she did it once, but she did it so well, but she kept going, "Welcome to the Elimination Chamber results." And I'm like, "It's reaction."
It's not the results.
So, but she got there in the end, and that was key. But
she did.
The other thing of the weekend before we talk about wrestling, people are like, "Those NXT call-ups, you keep talking about your weekend." But I watched season 10 of RuPaul's Drag Race. So now I've seen seasons 9 and 10, and I am hooked on this show.
I need to see more RuPaul's Drag Race. Like, I have seen some of it, and I love it. It's just, like, I have so much stuff that I watch that it has kind of fallen by the wayside a little bit. But I feel like once I get into it, I'm just going to binge a whole season.
Oh, yeah, you will. You will. And it's, like, what's good about it is, like, the people I tend to gravitate to. So this isn't giving away any winners or losers. But in series 9, Peppermint was who I liked. In season 10, it was initially Monet Exchange, and like they have some lip sync battles that are just the best. So, but like Steve had said, he was like, "You know, notice I really, really careful when I don't say the second name to say the anonymity first name."
yeah.
When Steve was trying to show me, he was like, "I've never been more sure that you're going to like something in my life." I was like, "Why? Why? Present your case, sir." And he said, "It's wrestling with wigs and makeup."
Yep.
And it is. It really is.
No, it's great. Why do you think I love Nobody's Watching Wrestling so much? It's drag queens reviewing wrestling.
This is true. This is true. But yeah, so I've watched season 10 of that. And so the worst thing is now I've been advised by Steve and Louise, another Louise, to go back and watch season 1. But season 1 is like very basic. And it's very hard to watch, and I can't get through it.
I think season 1, I've actually seen some of season 1.
And the other thing is, they're all terrible drag queens in season 1. Like, there are a couple in the first couple of weeks where I'm not even joking. I feel like if you gave me 2 solid weeks, I could do better. And I'm shaped like a large man. Like, they're so bad. And I'm like, these are the ones that won? But then I think it's because I've just watched 9 and 10 minutes that the game has been raised.
Well, I feel like it's the same thing with Hell's Kitchen, because like I watch a lot of Hell's Kitchen. Mr. Sandra and I are basically obsessed with it. And I went back after the last season ended, not this most recent one, but the one before. I was just like, what am I going to do with my life now that Hell's Kitchen is done? I can't handle this. So I went back on Hulu and like started watching from the beginning. And they hire all these home chefs who've never worked in a kitchen in their lives. Not that I have. I can barely like, you know, heat up things in a microwave for myself, but it doesn't mean I can't judge other people. And like, I don't know, like them trying to like do a scallop is just a nightmare, you know? And so things have progressed throughout the seasons.
See, Hell's Kitchen is one of those ones that I would, I know I would like, but I just don't, like, I go through like a Gordon Ramsay phase every 2 years where I watch like a month's worth of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then I stop. It's just a thing. But yeah, so the goal here is that I'm now obsessed with RuPaul's Drag Race. So expect those references, and then I need to go back to Bake Off, because remember I got so far through Bake Off.
Yeah, and I never actually started Bake Off, which is another thing I know that I'm going to get hooked on. Like once I start it, it's just that there's a commitment to be had there. Plus, there's so much wrestling. Like I just don't have time.
See, this is why I limit myself. I do NXT as my sort of like my last one I do.
Mm-hmm.
I do that probably because you and I covered it. If I wasn't covering it, I don't know if I'd watch every week, but I'd watch most weeks anyway, and then I'd watch the clips and other stuff. Like I would definitely
check. If we weren't covering it, I'd probably treat NXT the way I do 205 Live right now, which means like I watch it most weeks. And now that it's back on Tuesday nights, it's actually easier for me to remember to watch 205 Live, because if I'm home, like, which I normally am home on Tuesday nights, I wasn't last night obviously, but like if I'm watching SmackDown Live, then I'm like, oh yeah, I can just turn on 205 Live after. I still think it's not a great decision to have 205 Live on after SmackDown because of crowd reaction and all that kind of stuff, but it's more convenient for me, so at least there's a silver lining.
At least a silver lining. But even NXT UK, I'm sure it's good. It's never gonna break in. Just unless like major things happen. But
I'll put that on in the background sometimes, and then like if there are performers that I really enjoy, then I start paying more attention. That's kind of how I am with 205 Live too.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a lot of good news to cover. Obviously, the big stuff is going to be Raw and SmackDown with the NXT call ups and how that all figures out and matters. But I think for this week we'll just go through quickfire topics continuously for the kind of hour. And see what we do. So first thing I want to ask you about, just want to bring it up. was that apparently Vince McMahon is very unhappy that The Undertaker is doing StarCast 2.
Well, that's not shocking. Of course he's unhappy with it.
Now, Vince and I are cool. He's okay with him doing my shows. But
well, you're all the way over there in the UK. That's like a foreign land. No one pays attention to what's going on over there, right?
Kinda. but like, the thing that strikes me as weird is like, so okay, he's only doing an autograph sign and it isn't really connected, but like, of course he was going to be annoyed. Like, Dave Meltzer was like, oh, I didn't really see it as a big deal. And I'm like, really? Like, his greatest ever creation?
Especially because it, I mean, I know that StarCast is not an AEW event, but it's connected to AEW. And, like, of course he's going to be annoyed. I don't even understand why that would come as a surprise.
Yeah, but the thing that strikes me is that, like, so The Undertaker, obviously, and I'm, look, people can ask me all they want. I'm not going to divulge finances to you. But, you know, there are figures out there, whether they are real or not, who knows? Well, some people know. But anyway...
some people know. I mean, I think we can all agree The Undertaker is not like someone who's going to be booked for cheap.
He's not a cheap date.
That's a fair thing to say, I think.
But at the same time, it almost feels like the StarCast thing, and I could be reading too much into this, and I don't know anything. I'm not giving any insider information, but I almost feel like what he's doing here is almost a kind of a, hey, there's interest in me over here, just so you know.
Because well, yeah, I mean, especially because he's not booked for WrestleMania this year.
Which Dave Meltzer has said that, you know, Vince, you know, there very feasibly could be somewhere Vince wants to put him on WrestleMania to kind of mend the fences. Would you care about a drink break for you?
True. Well, it depends who he's fighting.
Exactly. But I think that, but again, I mean, now also I could be making more of this up, but maybe he's not happy with how he's been presented in the last couple of years.
Like maybe well, I wouldn't
he,
be.
Maybe he's not thrilled about it. Like, all I'm saying is it feels like to me that him agreeing to do that show would be... It's too coincidental to be like, just a coincidence. Like, you know, if I was still working... I can't think of an example. Anyway, but I wonder how it's all going to play out. You know, and if he was to do something at WrestleMania, I mean, this is not a conversation to have with you, but just thinking out loud... I don't know who he faces. I don't know what he does. I don't know what I don't know what you do without it just being another kind of like, here's the old guy that we like.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, my biases aside, like, say I was a big Undertaker fan, right? Still, like, who do you have him face at this point? Because there's no story. And we found out last year what happens when, you know, he doesn't show up for a story and there's the potential of something really cool and then it just kind of falls flat. And you don't want to have that again. You don't want to have that for years and years and years in a row. I mean, he did the same thing with Bray Wyatt. He didn't show up for anything. Bray Wyatt carried the whole feud and then he just beat him. So that kind of thing gets frustrating. And it doesn't really make Undertaker look that good. And he doesn't look great when he's in matches. So it's like it's becoming uncomfortable to watch him try.
Like, I fully think that you could, I mean, this is not hard stuff to do, right? You could figure out a match for him to have at WrestleMania that goes 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. Really high octane. He works with somebody young that people want to see him in the ring with, and it could work and it could be really good. But you have to, you know, it's the Heyman thing, right? It's like you have to play to the strengths and hide the weaknesses.
Mm-hmm. Which they have not done.
Who thinks a 30-minute match for him at this stage of his career is a good idea?
And I don't know.
And who thinks that we want that? Like, who thinks that, like, you know, they really want 30 minutes of him having a match?
Like, it's the imagine how much more could be. Theory, right?
But that's one of the stories. My prediction, I think he ends up doing Mania in some way. I think he does something there. But I almost am like kind of... Right, so say he can go out and make X amount of money doing these signings. Like, they're going to need Tyler... If they don't want him doing them, then they're either going to come up with something else for him to do, or... You know, maybe they need to take control of his bookings. Maybe that's how it goes. Maybe it's kind of like, you know, they take care of it all for him and all he has to do is show up at signings and stuff, which, I mean, I would not be a fan of that process. But, you know,
would have to pay him a fair amount of money to make it worth his time. Because if he can make a bunch of money doing signings and appearances and stuff, then more power to him, right?
Yeah.
And he's never done them.
Never done them.
You know, I mean, that's part of the thing with, you know, you bringing him to the UK was huge because he doesn't do these sorts of things. And now it seems he's starting to kind of get there, which means he's probably edging more toward wanting to be done in the ring and wanting to, you know, maybe be Mark Calloway more than The Undertaker.
Do you know what
and
I'd love?
That's interesting.
I'd love if he formed a new ministry.
Who would be in it? He would choose Apollo Crews, Angry Mojo Rawley, which, I mean, I love Angry Mojo Rawley. Angry Mojo Rawley is one of my favorite things right now. But, oh, who else would he choose on the roster?
He's a shit
still
tag
there.
Team.
The Colognes. He would choose the Colognes.
I mean, we say this.
Dana Brooke
I'd be
would
so
be in the ministry.
Dana Brooke.
Oh my gosh, me too.
Mojo Rawley and the Colognes. Another WWE.
I think I've nailed it. I think I've nailed the new ministry.
There you go. Dana Brooke, the Colognes, Apollo Crews. Oh, if only. Right, a couple of wee things.
TJP.
TJP. TJP who said the other day. Now, look, I'm not the sort of person that's like, women should be above men as a default. It should be the match people want the most that's the default. And TJP was like, I think Brock Lesnar and Seth Rollins should main event WrestleMania over the women's division. Or over the women's match. I'm like, are you serious?
Because TJP is trash.
Like, get a brain.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he had a good match with Humberto Carrillo on 205 Live last night because Humberto Carrillo was in it. And my favorite thing about it is Drew Gulak and Jack Gallagher trying to recruit Humberto Carrillo because, like, them trying to recruit this little, like, flippy dude and bring out his potential with ground-based offense is, like, my favorite story on 205 Live.
But TJP is just an idiot.
But TJP is trash, and so him being used as fodder is fine, is great and fine.
Now, like, why is he trash? I have a feel. I've heard something about why he might be trash. Is it the reason that I've heard?
Probably.
That he enjoys a less mature company?
That is part of the reason, yes.
Okay, good. Just so I know.
He also has very, like, MRA tendencies, like, you know, meninist. No, MRA,
what's
like
MRA?
Men's Rights Activist, where people think that men are being downtrodden and need to get their voices heard in the world.
Oh, TJP.
Which, you know, makes sense why he would think Brock Lesnar and Seth Rollins should main event over those women who are just trying to, you know, take over everything and be equal parts of society.
I mean, you got the vote. What else do you want?
Right? I had someone say that to me unironically the other day.
Wow. What's it like to be that person? I mean, don't get me wrong. I have a whole thing that I will never get into on this, but, like, nothing angers me more than when somebody can't win an argument, so they try to use the term feminism to win an argument.
That's frustrating. You need to actually have a point.
Exactly. I tell you who does have a point, though. Ty Dillinger, or, like, Ty Dillinger, right? You think, what could his real name be? Ronnie Arnell.
Mm-hmm. It's a fine name.
It's like
Kip right?
Sop. No, it's not as bad as Kip Sop. That's ridiculous.
Kip Sop is just a great, or like Richard Blood.
anyway, Ty Dillinger has said that he basically has requested his release from WWE. He wrote a post about it on Twitter. So what do you make? He debuted on the main roster, if I'm not mistaken, the SmackDown after WrestleMania 33 in Orlando.
Mm-hmm.
I
remember.
Really done anything. Brief friendship with R-Truth, I think, at one point.
Yeah, brief friendship with R-Truth. A couple, like, you know, U.S. title opportunities that didn't obviously pan out for him, but he's been involved in, like, little bits of story. Ty Dillinger seems like someone who was never meant to make it to the main roster, right? Like, he was brought into NXT, and he didn't do a ton in NXT. He was, you know, he got over on his own. He got the number 10 over so well. Everyone loved chanting 10. He ruined counting in wrestling because fans will only chant 10. He was one of my favorites in NXT for a long time, and he was one of those people that was never supposed to be successful. And he ended up making more of a name for himself in WWE than I think anyone else thought he would, but he was never going to rise to prominence. He was never going to be main event. And I mean, the fact that he even got to the main roster, I remember when he did get to the main roster, he was like, I wasn't supposed to even get here. Like, this is really freaking cool. But at the same time, he doesn't seem like someone who just wants to sit backstage and do nothing. Right. Like if he's involved even in lower card stories, he seemed cool with that. Like on Twitter, I remember someone asked him, and I can't remember when this was, but someone asked him within the past couple months, like, why don't you go back to NXT where, you know, you were popular? And he just quote tweeted it with tried, you know, like he wants to be doing things. He wants to be doing something. And as a performer, it must be very frustrating to sit in the back and not be used. And, you know, when he was in his little friendship with R-Truth, or when he would, you know, show up on Fashion Files or whatever, like that kind of stuff was fun, but he just hasn't done much of anything. So I totally understand why he would request his release from WWE. The whole thing sounds amicable the way he wrote it in his statement. You know, he says he wants to go elsewhere and, you know, take a bet on himself. I know I did see Cody Rhodes, who is friends with him, you know, quote tweet it and say, you know, bet on yourself, you know, keep moving forward, something like that. I can't remember the exact tweet, but I think it is interesting that Cody Rhodes publicly is like, yes, old friend, this is a good decision for you. I think, you know, I miss Ty Dillinger on TV. And if Ty Dillinger can go elsewhere and then do something and be prominent and get to actually wrestle, which he's very good at doing, then more power to him. I think it's great. I wish him nothing but the best, obviously. Like, I really like him.
It's kind of a good idea he's done it now. I think he's 38 years old, just had a birthday, but like, there's going to come a time soon where AEW, I know Jericho said this, which was kind of, yes, it's harsh but true, they can't really pick up every WWE guy that doesn't get used, because then it becomes like a thing. So maybe it's a good idea for Ty Dillinger to go now, because then he might be one of those kind of last, you know, undercard guys to go there.
Well, and I think he's one of those people who, I think I said before on the podcast, before he requested his release, that he's one that I would be interested in seeing go there, because he is someone who has been kind of underutilized, but he seems like he has potential. I think David McCutcheon actually said, I think it was on the Facebook community, that he could be another Juice Robinson potentially, right? Like someone who just wasn't used in WWE, wasn't really doing much of anything, but has the potential, and who knows if it'll happen, but has the potential to really reinvent himself and become more of a player somewhere else. And I think there are, you know, plenty of people on the roster, but AEW doesn't want to be known as the company that takes WWE rejects either. So it's, yeah, it'll be an interesting balance to strike. That's part of what makes wrestling very exciting right now, right? Is there just seems to be so much possibility, and we have no idea what's going to happen or where people are going to go.
Yeah, so I guess we'll see where he... Also interesting that he decided to post it publicly, which kind of almost like says if they don't give it to him, that he wants people to know that he's asked for it. So it's a ballsy move for him to do.
Yeah, because it didn't say he asked and was granted. It said that he asked for it. And I did kind of wonder if something was up, because I know a lot of WWE performers have been changing their Twitter names to their real shoot names, you know? But he also changed his Twitter handle itself, because it used to be WWE Dillinger. And I think last week or so, he changed it to Perfect, like the number 10 and then an N afterward. And when people change their actual handle like that, it's kind of like, oh, that's interesting. And then I think the day before yesterday, he posted like a silhouette of someone tipping their hat, and it just said, thank you. So it seemed to be that something was up, because yes, maybe I follow Ty Dillinger quite closely on Twitter, because he's one of my faves.
So watch this space, I guess. What else? AEW have announced that the over-the-top Battle Royals come back, but also Cody Rhodes is going to be facing a mystery opponent.
There was an interesting video that AEW put out with Cody and Brandy discussing the card, and Brandy looks at, you know, Cody's opponent that she has in her hand, and the opponent's face is blurred out, and she's like, were you going to talk to me about this? Are you just doing this without talking to me? And Cody's like, no, this is fine. This is what we're doing. Yeah, I'm intrigued by the mystery opponent situation. They're building it up, which is cool. One of my friends thinks it's going to be Flip Gordon, which I think could be interesting. And it would make sense why Brandy is, you know, kind of hesitant and not really sure about it. Because obviously in story, like, Brandy and Flip are best friends, and Cody wants Flip to die in a fire. And, you know, like Flip hasn't really been as much a player on being the elite recently, but I haven't seen this week, so I don't know what happens there. But I think that could be an interesting story. It could also be someone completely out of left field. It could be an ex WWE person. It could be, you know, who knows? But I love the speculation and I love a good story. So I'm intrigued. I will be following along with the saga.
Following along with the saga. So your guess is going to be Flip Gordon for now.
I mean, that's one of my friend's guesses and I don't have anyone better to suggest. So sure, by default, it's the name I've heard mentioned that makes the most sense to me at this point, but who knows, like could have an epiphany of someone else. I have no idea.
Somebody just sent us a tweet, like to us in Goldust and just said, please come to Toronto. You licked my face in front of thousands of fans and made me an instant heel. Truly one of the greatest talents I've seen and my second favorite of all time. And then just put in brackets, sorry, but I saw Hulk Hogan first.
What?
I mean,
there's a lot to unpack there. Why was Goldust licking people's faces? He's not a bushwhacker.
He was being creepy and androgynous, I guess, at the time.
Oh, okay.
By the way, I also want to say, not that I really care about this at all, but somebody messaged me about it last night, who I won't name. But apparently there's this thing where, like, John Wayne was a homophobic guy.
Now, oh, shocking. A white man in the 50s was homophobic?
But what makes me laugh, well, not laugh, is that, like, some people are like, oh my god. Like, the thing is, it wasn't just that he was homophobic. You can tell the real scale of a person by the way he threw about the language in a media interview. Like, that's a whole new level of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, he's, you know, he was talking about fags and all that sort of stuff. But the thing that I think people should be able to bear in mind is that, like, my favorite wrestler was Hulk Hogan and still is. And that's not going to change. Doesn't mean I need to think that Terry Bollea, the guy, is the greatest guy in the world. And honestly, if you really have a problem with John Wayne being a homophobe and a racist, maybe presidents who lock up Mexican kids could be someone we could actually turn our attention to.
Yeah, yeah, maybe. Funny about that. Where would that ever happen? Surely some backwoods country where they don't know.
Country in the world, Sandra.
Ugh, I live here.
How much was your healthcare last year? Like $5,000?
I don't have healthcare. I went to the doctor and paid like $200 and that is my healthcare.
Yeah, no, but the reason I bring it up is because there's so many, like, people so often now, if you have a favourite in something, they will try their best to tell you about what real life stuff they've done to make them horrendous and that sort of stuff. And it's like, but the funniest bit is that there's people who will say all the time, you know, this guy's my favourite, that guy's my favourite. And I'm like, I know stuff on that person that's worse than the Hogan stuff. Like, worse. Oh, yeah. But it's like, just let people have their favourites. Like, if I'm not going to crucify Jim Ross because he was a John Wayne mark when he was a kid, or still is, like whoever you want, like whatever film you want.
Yeah, I don't see the point in expending tons of energy. I mean, like, pointing it out and criticizing it, I think is fine, but I don't know. There are actual real world problems with people who are alive and problematic that I think deserve a little bit more focus.
China is going to the Hall of Fame.
Yay!
It's going to be DX inducted as a group. The group's going to be The Outlaws, Billy Gunn and Road Dogg, X-Pac, Triple H, Shawn Michaels and China. So the original incarnation, not other people who were in there, not Ravishing Rick Rude, who's already in the Hall of Fame. What? Why people are bothered about this, I can't understand my life. But what do you think?
Do people understand how terrible Rick Rude was in DX? Like, do they understand how awful he was in his poop brown suits, selling the premiums to buy the policies and all that stuff? Like, he was wretched in DX.
Is that the end of the thought?
Yes.
Okay. I was going to ask you about China. So what do you think about her going in? There's, you know, a lot of buzz about her going in. And what do you think about her going in as part of D-Generation X? Give me your thoughts.
I think it's great. I think we talked about this on Retro, but I think that Chyna going in is awesome. I think that Chyna wanted nothing more than to go into the WWE Hall of Fame. I think it sucks that she's not here to enjoy that accolade for herself. It's really shitty that they waited until after she died to be put in, but there's nothing that you can do about it at this point, obviously. Like, it's just a shitty situation. And I think to honor her memory as part of DX is good. It seemed like Chyna was someone who just wanted to be accepted and really wanted to get back into good graces with WWE. And, you know, the fact that that didn't happen during her lifetime is incredibly unfortunate and one of, you know, just one of those sad stories in wrestling. But I think it's great that she's going in. I think, you know, DX going in is fine. I think they're garbage. I want to throw them in the bin, but like, people like them, and I suppose that they were influential. And if it means that Chyna gets into the Hall of Fame, then I think that's great. I did have a lot of like mixed feelings at the beginning of was it Raw or Smack? It was Raw when Triple H came out and was like, the first inductees in the Hall of Fame, DX. And it's like NXT dad Triple H, who gave me NXT, which was like my favorite promotion for so long. And like, you know, he's bringing about changes to WWE and all this stuff. And then he's like referencing his DX self, who I just want to throw in the bin so badly because he's trash. It gave me a lot of complicated emotions, but I'm very glad that Chyna's going in the Hall of Fame. I think she deserves to go in on her own. But at the same time, I don't think she would have minded going in as part of DX. And the fact that she's going to be a Hall of Famer is long overdue.
Well, the other thing is, and this is not the part people want to hear, it kind of sucks to put in dead people, because when you do it, like, I've been there, that you don't, there's not, it's a very sad occasion. Like, it's very, very sad. And like, you know, who inducts her, who accepts for it, all that kind of stuff. I think the reason I'm okay with it is because all the stuff that makes her go in is the DX run. That is that is the run. Everything she did after DX was not great. Well, no, there were parts. There was stuff
Corporate Chyna's been pretty good, and she's like, but she's still fighting DX.
Exactly, she's still involved.
I do them
now. Obviously, I can't talk about other stuff that I enjoy that happens in the year 2000 that she's involved in. But for the most part, it is that, like, I saw somebody go, "Why is she not in her own?" And just showed a picture of her and Ivory in a match, and I'm like, "You do remember her in the women's division was the worst idea." No, the worst idea was for her to be in the men's division. Second worst, because the problem was, once she was in the men's division and having the most mediocre matches possible, then when she
went back... we've already started to see on Retro that she's not a very good wrestler.
No, but then the other problem is, because she... Like, so when she wrestled Ivory, Ivory looked like a child next to her.
Mm-hmm.
And then they weren't going to... You know, Chyna had been built up too much that you couldn't really... It's almost like one of those, like the Asuka situation they have right now. In some ways, but it's like too big to be with the smaller talent, but too, but the kind of odd women out. Like, Chyna was a bit like the odd person out, because they didn't want to put her in matches with men, but they were all put her in the women's division. She'd be the face of the women's division, but she could beat everybody in the women's division with ease, and none of them had been built to, you know, because at that point, as much as, you know, women were not badass wrestlers in 2001 for WWF. They just weren't. But I think it's great that she's going in. And I think the fact that she's going in with DX, I think she would have wanted it. I think had she been alive, she would have been in anyway at some point. I think it was getting to that stage. But it just sucks that she wasn't here to see it. And I hope that she gets a good mention. I think it will be the beginning of more stuff. Like, I think we'll get like Chyna action figures and more focus on her than they do right now, because there's kind of like a nicer bow on it of her being a Hall of Famer. So that's good.
I hope so. Because, I mean, you know, like I've said before, Chyna is one of the names that I knew growing up, and I didn't know anybody from wrestling. Like, I knew who Stone Cold Steve Austin was, and I knew who Chyna was. And that was kind of it, you know? Like, I knew who Hulk Hogan was, I guess, earlier on, but I just sort of forgot that he was a wrestler a lot of the time.
Because he also had that great movie career as well, so you'd be, you know, you'd
the
be
amazing
actor,
movie career. Well, I remember like him from like Saturday morning cartoons and stuff, you know. But yeah, like, I mean, Chyna absolutely deserves the accolade, and you know, her going in is the reason that I'm more okay with DX going in, even though like Triple H coming out to announce that he himself is the first inductee into the Hall of Fame was just the most DX Triple H thing that could have happened. I feel like he's
always trying to battle not being the Hulk, but like, he desperately wants to be the Hulk.
Mm-hmm.
It's a constant thing.
It is.
So, how the fuck do you cover Raw and SmackDown? So before that, I do want to give quite a bit of time this, because you watch it. They announced. Well, have you watched 205 Live this week?
Yes.
Okay, so they're doing an 8-man tournament to see who Murphy faces at WrestleMania. you watch the show more than obviously I do. Who, is it a front runner? Is it someone you think they're going to give it to? Who do you expect Murphy to be facing at WrestleMania for the Cruiserweight title?
There is no situation that I am not going to answer Drew Gulak to this question, because he is my favorite and he is who I want to win. I don't know that he necessarily makes the most sense right now, though, because he is kind of a heel and Buddy Murphy's kind of a heel. I don't know. I almost wonder if they're going to give it to Humberto Carrillo and if they're going to do kind of a push him to the moon type story where, you know, he's come in and he's been beating people and he's been great and he's been getting wins and like Drew Gulak's been behind him. I don't know. Maybe they could build to Drew Gulak versus Humberto in the finals, which could be a great story. So I would say one of those two, because I don't really see anyone else that is interesting enough. I mean, like, they've been giving Mike Kanellis some more stuff to do lately, which has been interesting considering rumors that he and Maria requested their releases and were denied them. I know that they've denied that on social media, so we don't know if that's true. But I want it to be Drew Gulak because I always want it to be Drew Gulak, but Humberto Carrillo would be another fantastic choice. And I think Humberto versus Buddy Murphy could be great, and that's a new match. Or it's not. I mean, like, he had the open challenge, that's right. But it was great then, and I would love to see it again.
So we're going into Raw on Monday. You can listen to our Elimination Chamber review over at patreon.com/insideropes. 90 minutes of us going through all of the stuff. We tried to talk Sandra off a ledge after Ruby Riott and Ronda Rousey, but it provoked some quite good discussion points, so it's worth listening mm-hmm. to. Go check it out. But Raw started off rather strangely, with Triple H announcing that on Raw we were going to see new talent. We were going to see some members of the NXT roster. We were going to see Ricochet, Tommaso Ciampa and Johnny Gargano, and Aleister Black.
So your current NXT champion, your current NXT North American champion, your former NXT champion, and your former NXT North American champion. The top four guys in NXT.
The literal top four. So, yep. So he, you know, he as you mentioned, he talked about the DX thing. He tried to kind of babyface himself by saying that he quite liked what Becky Lynch did at Elimination Chamber. So then he...
Because Triple H is edgy and cool, so of course he'd like what Becky Lynch is doing and is definitely not trying to attach himself to her star power.
So he throws it to... We're going to see Ricochet, we're going to see Black, Gargano and Ciampa. NXT says the future is now. The fans are going to see the future tonight. So I guess before we talk about anything else, what was your initial reaction when you heard, well, because I texted you and told you, that these four were going to be appearing on Raw?
I was baffled. I was shocked. I was screaming internally because I couldn't scream externally because I was at work and, you know, people might call the police for me having a mental breakdown. I just was kind of like, why is this happening? What is going on? But I was pleased. I had not opened the internet to see the vitriol of some people yet. I thought it was great. I was like, okay, this seems like something they're just throwing at the wall and they're going to highlight NXT talent. I couldn't wait to get home and watch Raw, which normally, you know, I watch Raw now, but it's not something that I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't wait to see what happens. And I really couldn't wait to get home to watch Raw. I wanted to see how they were featured. I wanted to see if we got fresh matchups. I wanted to see how they were used. I wanted to see if there was any explanation. It was shocking for sure, but intriguing and made me want to watch. So I think that what they were trying to accomplish, probably with ratings and shaking things up and kind of throwing stuff at the wall, it worked for me. What did you think? Like, what was your initial reaction to it?
Well, so what initially happened was not actually what happened. Like, I kind of thought that this was just kind of, we want to pop a rate and we'll bring these four NXT guys up. Like, you remember they did the thing, you remember the match, like Rain Man, but like, remember they did the thing in like 2014 or 2015 where Sami Zayn and there's a couple of guys from NXT, they had a tag match?
Sami Zayn and Tyler Breeze and was Tyson Kidd in that one? And I want to say it was the Fatal 4-Way people. Was Adrian Neville in that one? I can't remember who exactly it was. I know Sami Zayn and Tyler Breeze were there.
But there was a 4-Way match, or sort of tag team match with four guys from NXT, and then that was kind of it. Apparently that's not the case. Apparently these four are now on the main roster. Like,
which is very strange considering that two of them hold NXT belts, right? And this isn't the first time we've seen that, like, but it's been a while since we've seen someone from NXT who holds NXT gold on the main roster. It's been since Kevin Owens, right? So what are we going to do?
So apparently they're going to work the NXT shows through WrestleMania, and I guess one would presume that post-WrestleMania we will then, you know, they'll settle into a brand or something. I imagine. I mean,
I would think so. I mean, they have said too, NXT is, there are so many NXT things that are up in the air, and I really can't wait to get to, you know, watch NXT tonight after work, because they're teasing that there's going to be a big announcement of some kind. I almost was going to suggest to you, like, waiting to do the show until after we figured it out, but there's no way that, like, timing wise that would be feasible. But with NXT having like some sort of big announcement tonight that we don't know what it is. And then they've also announced that NXT is going to be part of the Superstar Shakeup, which I find very intriguing. So maybe people could actually go to NXT as well as come from NXT. So, you know, people who haven't been featured on the main roster in a while, like, I mean, Tyler Breeze would be my front runner to go back to NXT and inject some character and storytelling into NXT, which it has been lacking. There are a lot of things happening and a lot of shaking up happening, and this feels new and this feels different, and it feels like they're really trying something here.
Now, I had sent you a tweet thing that I'd seen that no, it's not here anymore. So I don't know if it was taken down or if it was false about NXT being involved in the Superstar Shakeup.
Oh, really? Did that get taken down?
Yeah, because somebody sent it to me.
Weird.
And I never went to check if it was real because I just assumed it was real. But I can't find it now. I can't see it. Let me just Google it, actually.
I wonder if maybe that's their big announcement for tonight.
That's what I assume it is. NXT Superstar Shakeup. See if anything comes up. News. I can't find anything on it.
Huh, interesting. So I guess things are even more up in the air, and maybe that wasn't like a real thing that is happening. I don't know. But it really seems like, I don't know, I think a lot of people have some valid criticisms of the call-ups, like specifically Tommaso Ciampa and Johnny Gargano, and we'll get to kind of what they do, but, you know, them being just together and a tag team after, you know, years of storytelling in NXT, and them still being fairly uncertain as, you know, partners as of last week on NXT, right? Like they were definitely not together. They were definitely not reunited. They were definitely, you know, Johnny Gargano was like, no, I am not your partner. I am Johnny Gargano. This is my moment. I am going to shine as North American champion. They were kind of hesitantly in an alliance, kind of. But I don't have as much a problem with it as some people do. And I feel like maybe I should, but I can't remember who it was on Twitter that got in touch with me and said, you know, the story seems pretty obvious, right? Like the boss of some kind said that Triple H, or, you know, whether it was Triple H or Vince or whoever, said there's an opportunity for you on the main roster, and it is as a team, and so you have to work together. And I think having some sort of backstage segment where Johnny reluctantly agrees to team with Tommaso, because Tommaso's been courting Johnny in NXT storyline anyway, I think that would be helpful in terms of storytelling. All of this seems to be kind of rushed and haphazard, and apparently the decision was made like on Monday to do this, and they didn't really inform a lot of the other roster is one of the things that I read. So some people were just kind of like, what is happening? So there wasn't time to flesh everything out, but it feels strange, but it's kind of good. It's almost what I've wanted to see them do with a group of NXT call-ups since the beginning, right? Like, it used to be when people came up, like when Kevin Owens came up from NXT, he was treated like a big star. When Sasha Banks came in from NXT, I remember she was in a trio, and that wasn't great, but like, she felt like a big deal, and she never wore her belt to the ring, and it was weird. But NXT call-ups have been very hit or miss, and lately they've been more miss than hit. Because it seems like NXT sent people who no longer really fit in NXT, or they were done with them and needed to put them somewhere. So they just put them on the main roster, but didn't have a plan for them. And they didn't really have anywhere that they fit in. And they weren't the top tier performers in NXT. They were just people that they needed to get rid of. This is actually, okay, you're taking people, the top tier of your talent in NXT, you're taking them, you're putting them on the main roster where they can shine to a larger audience. And they're treating them like the world-class talent they are. I didn't hear any words of like, these people having to prove themselves on a big stage or anything like that. Like DIY beating both the Revival and the Bar feels huge to me, because it's like, no, these guys are the best. Like they absolutely were ruling the world in NXT, and now they can rule the world on the main roster. It's fascinating to me. It's fascinating as an experiment, and it feels new, and it kind of feels like what they should have been doing all along.
Well, also, it's like, so like this year going to WrestleMania, and I'm not saying like nothing matters, but like Becky and Charlotte are going into the main event of WrestleMania.
Mm-hmm.
They were debuted as gym picks.
Yep. Stephanie McMahon's playthings.
So like I get the Gargano and Ciampa thing, but it's like on a sort of basic level, it's like people are really annoyed at the six call-ups they bring up because it's not the six call-ups they want. Then they bring up these four because they've just, you know, so apparently Vince McMahon decided he needed new stars, he needed names, so he brought these four guys up. They all were featured really heavily. They won. They were made to look like they belonged and were actually better than most of the mid-card, which they are. And then people were still annoyed. It's like, I get like having like critique and stuff, right? Because we do that mm-hmm. on here. But it's sometimes you just look at some people and go, you're never going to be happy, are you? Like, you're never going to be able to look at anything in your life and be like, this was good. Like, did you hear the thing about what Vince originally wanted to do with Ricochet?
No.
So apparently the original plan was Ricochet was going to go one-on-one with Finn Balor on Raw. They were going to have this, like, tear-down match that went, like, 20 minutes and all that kind of stuff. But Triple H kind of stepped in and said, look, I don't think we should do it because they're both babyfaces. We don't want Balor to lose. Have him just come IC champ. We don't want to have Ricochet losing his first match. So that was why we got the tag match instead. Because we're kind of tight on time a little bit, I'm just going to kind of lump the NXT call-ups on Raw into kind of one conversation. So we got Finn Balor and Ricochet in a team against Bobby Lashley and Leo Rush, which Ricochet and Finn Balor got the win. Mm-hmm. Then we saw DIY taking on the Revival in a non-title match, which DIY were able to win with the old super kick and knee combo. And then we had Aleister Black beating Elias. So what did you make overall of how they were featured, who they faced, who they beat, and I guess in terms of the Gargano Ciampa stuff, did they reference it in any way to an extent that you'd be happy with, or were you just kind of like, you know, they didn't mention it at all?
They did mention that Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa had fought in NXT and then come back together, but I don't think they referenced their history as much as I would have liked, because that like they were the ones that it was very jarring to me to just see them as a team on Raw and then again on SmackDown. But I did notice that Johnny Gargano looked hesitant about it. Like after they get the win, if you see when the ref is raising their hands, Tommaso Ciampa goes over to Johnny and is like, yeah, we won. And Johnny Gargano's just kind of looking at him like, you motherfucker, like why are you touching me? So I thought Johnny's acting and facial expressions there were really great. I think overall, everyone really got a chance to shine. I mean, Aleister Black interrupting Elias, is Elias the most exciting performer for Aleister Black to interrupt? No, but I think Aleister Black got to do his cool entrance. Aleister Black got to be Aleister Black and do, you know, his Aleister Black style of wrestling against Elias. And, you know, he did get the win. So I think that was, you know, I don't think that was a bad choice. I think Ricochet looked great in the tag. I think, you know, I'm glad that Finn Balor versus Ricochet didn't happen yet, because I think it would have been a mistake to beat Finn Balor, especially because Finn Balor needs some convincing wins after the way he won the Intercontinental title. Because, you know, like as Leo Rush said, you don't deserve to be IC champion. And that kind of almost feels a little bit too true. So I would like to see Finn Balor get some convincing wins. We talked about that on the Elimination Chamber review. But I thought Ricochet looked great. And, you know, Ricochet being able to flip and be Ricochet and do the things that he just defies nature. Like someone called Trevor from Paducah, Kentucky should not be able to look like him and do the things that he does, but he is, and he's just an enigma. And DIY getting a win over the Revival felt huge. Like I'm not necessarily a fan of the Revival losing right after winning the tag team titles. I want the Revival to be treated with kid gloves and, you know, built into a thing because the Raw tag team division is so dire, but at the same time, there's nobody bigger for them to beat than the tag team champions, right? So it felt like a way to debut DIY as world-class talent. And I think on SmackDown, which we'll get to, it was a little bit more jarring on commentary when I think it was specifically when DIY, or no, it was when Aleister Black and Andrade Cien Almas were fighting. Corey Graves had some really weird verbiage where he was like, you know, most of the world didn't see the battle that these men had, and now you're getting to see it on the big stage. And I was glad he didn't say, like, you know, they're proving themselves on the big stage and, like, coming from the minor leagues or anything like that, the way that they've normally talked about NXT call-ups, especially the heel commentator. But it seemed very strange because he was almost talking like, you know, nobody in the world is watching NXT, so now you're finally getting to see them here on SmackDown. And it almost felt like it was putting down the network in a way. Like, I would have preferred it to be, you know, if you're not watching NXT, this is what you've been missing, and you should probably check that out, because you know, there was an opportunity there to highlight both brands. But I mean, that's kind of a nitpicky detail. Overall, though, I thought everyone looked great and everyone got to kind of be themselves and shine.
Yeah, I thought that, I mean, the DIY thing is problematic, because I guess, like, one of the things they still do need to work on is what extent is this the same universe or mm-hmm. not. But yeah, I like Gargano's kind of, you know, subtle hints to it. And I think, to be honest, point on popular opinion, I hope that they do find a way to be a team for like 6 months and then have a split again on a bigger stage and make it all kind of work into one almost. Like, you know, mm-hmm. we came together for the main roster because that was the deal that was available. But, you know, I just couldn't forget what you did to me.
Yeah, well, I don't think it's unsalvageable. Like, it was jarring to see them together. I would like a backstage segment to explain it, or even a tweet or something to explain it, just so that, you know, those of us who have been following the saga for years in NXT can kind of understand why this has happened. But
no, I think tonight's NXT has been pre-taped. I don't know if next week's has, but yeah, we're obviously going to see more with them in NXT and see how they can explain that.
And I'm curious if they're going to have to, like, re-edit tonight's episode to kind of accommodate the main roster call-ups. It's going to be very interesting to see how they handle this because, you know, NXT being pre-taped and set in stone, you know, 4 weeks at a time or whatever, isn't conducive to the ever-changing landscape of Raw and SmackDown being a live program. And it's always interesting when stuff like this happens, how they have to kind of scramble.
So just a couple other things that happened on Raw. We got Braun Strowman beating Baron Corbin in a tables match. He kind of gets his win there.
Who could possibly care?
Nobody. Nobody, nobody, nobody. It's funny because I remember, like, I think it was Elimination Chamber or last week's Raw or something. I texted somebody and went, oh my god, the mid-card Raw is so bad.
Mm-hmm.
And now we've got four new guys. Yay!
Yep.
Heyman did a promo about Lesnar, which is pretty good, but it was kind of more of the same. It wasn't really anything new.
No, it was like video packages, wasn't it?
Yeah, he set up a video package and all that kind of stuff. But he was, you know, it was basically more hype for Lesnar.
Mm-hmm.
Nia Jax and Tamina looked to be the new challengers for Bayley and Sasha for the women's tag title, which I'm happy about. They should be the challengers. Nia Jax is really good. Tamina Snuka is alive. Any
She's
thoughts
atrocious.
On that?
Bless her. She's terrible at wrestling, Tamina, but as a character, she works. So if she could stop trying to do splashes, I think that would help.
It would. If she could just stop wrestling, that would help. I like her as a bodyguard.
Accurate.
Drew McIntyre.
But even, like, I mean, we see on Retro Raw, though, right? Like, Mark Henry is not a good wrestler, but he is effective in his matches because he stands there and lets people wrestle around him and is big and can knock people down. Like, be big and knock people down and stop trying to jump off the top rope ineffectively.
We also got Drew McIntyre beating Dean Ambrose pretty quickly. So I wonder what they're going to do with Drew at WrestleMania. I'm kind of intrigued. Because he mentioned WrestleMania and the thing with Triple H, where he wanted some competition. He wants to get his WrestleMania path and all that. So seems there's a plan, but we don't know where it's going to go. So, and then the main event was Ruby Riott against Ronda Rousey. It went about 12 minutes. Apparently, the original plan was going to be Ronda Rousey squashing Alexa Bliss.
Really?
It was changed because the idea was that she could have a better match with Ruby Riott. So it kind of worked out well for you. You want to
Yeah, because I wanted to see Ruby Riott versus Ronda Rousey, and I got to see Ruby Riott versus Ronda Rousey. Like, I understand everyone who's like, why would Ruby Riott get a rematch after being squashed at Elimination Chamber? I have no idea. It doesn't make sense why Ruby Riott got a rematch. There was a lot on Raw that didn't make any sense. Raw was bonkers, and I enjoyed the bonkersness of it, but there was a lot of stuff to criticize in terms of pacing and in terms of storytelling not making sense. Like, why Baron Corbin and Braun Strowman again? Why Ruby Riott versus Ronda Rousey after Ronda so convincingly squashed her?
Raw was
but if
on
Ruby
all the
was
drugs.
like Raw was on all of the drugs. But if Ruby was like, I want another chance to prove myself, you know, last night I got caught, I want a chance to have a proper match, like, fine, give her a rematch because it's a match that I wanted to see. So selfishly, it worked out in my favor. And I really enjoyed their Raw match. I thought it was good. So I was glad that Ruby actually got a chance to do something and not just be fodder for Ronda Rousey. I mean, obviously she still lost, but she is such a capable in-ring performer that, I mean, I'm still kind of mad about Elimination Chamber. I would have preferred that they had this match at Elimination Chamber and then, you know, if Ruby demanded a rematch or whatever and then got squashed, maybe, I don't know, like, it still kind of sticks in my craw, but I'm glad we actually got to see the match. One of the other things that I forgot to mention last week when we were talking about Raw was Dean Ambrose coming up to Seth Rollins and saying, like, just slay the beast, which I thought was fascinating. And then Dean Ambrose this week on Raw, you know, saying to Seth Rollins, you know, why weren't you out there when I was fighting Drew McIntyre? And Seth Rollins looking at Dean Ambrose like, are you on all of the drugs just like Raw? Because you are the one who just attacked me and beat me up and used our friend's cancer against us. So it's kind of a more interesting story between Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins than I've seen recently. And Dean Ambrose just kind of seems to be like, I'm on my way out, I don't give any fucks, and now I can just actually be entertaining for some reason when I'm on my way out. But I'm more interested in that story than I have been in a while. Seth Rollins still does not scream main event of WrestleMania to me. Becky Lynch and Charlotte and Ronda Rousey do. So yeah, like, they're definitely the more interesting story for me. But yeah, just something to mention. Oh, and also, Heavy Machinery stomping around Lacey Evans is my everything. Like, Lacey Evans as lady who shows up and walks a runway and is classy, just Lacey as a classy lady, works for me. I've seen a bunch of people like, who is this for? What is the purpose? You know what? This is for me because I love it. Like, I love every time she appears. I know, right? And like, I think it's just people are talking about her, though. And so everyone's just like, this is not effective. Like, I think it kind of is because everyone's talking about Lacey Evans and like, what the fuck is she doing just coming out here? Right. And Heavy Machinery are just like, they're baffling and I love them. And just the image of them like stomping around and almost, I mean, they are kind of doing the bushwhacker walk a little too much, but like them just stomping around her, it's just such a weird juxtaposition of characters. Like, I would love for Lacey Evans to be involved with Heavy Machinery in some way. I think that'd be hilarious.
I love her so much. She's one of my faves. So let's move to SmackDown. I enjoyed Raw because it was bonkers. And like, yes, I understand everyone's criticisms of why the creative has been shit a lot of the time the last year or so. Well, post-WrestleMania, really, from last year. But they're making a lot of changes that I like, so I'm happy. I enjoyed it. On SmackDown, again, for the NXT call-ups, we've got Aleister Black defeating Andrade. We got DIY defeating Cesaro and Sheamus. And we got Ricochet defeating Eric Young. More of the same strong showings for them. What did you make of it?
Yeah, I mean, again, the NXT call-ups, I think, were allowed to shine. The Aleister Black Andrade Cien Almas situation was interesting because, I mean, the last time we watched that match, we were in New Orleans, and I was kind of, I guess I still don't trust the main roster very much because I was like, are they going to mention their history because Aleister Black won the title from Andrade Cien Almas? And they did. They mentioned it, which was good. This was where Corey Graves had that weird, like, nobody saw that match in New Orleans, though, type comment, which kind of got under my skin a little bit, but yeah, I thought they had a great match, and you know, I love the two of them wrestling together. I think they work really well together. I thought it was a great showing for Aleister Black. Andrade Cien Almas is also awesome, and I think that he has been, you know, pretty prominent on the main roster recently. Like, he wasn't in the Elimination Chamber match, so he got put a little bit more in the background, but I think he's proven in recent weeks that he can take a loss and still, you know, he'll come back from it and be fine. And I think it was a great way to highlight Aleister Black. I think Aleister Black didn't have the most exciting opponent on Raw, so he had a better opponent on SmackDown to kind of really show what he can do. And I think it was a bit the opposite for Ricochet, because Ricochet, you know, was in a match with Finn Balor and Bobby Lashley and Leo Rush, and I thought Ricochet looked awesome on Raw, and like, him being with the Intercontinental Champion was kind of cool, even though it didn't really make sense, like, why was he coming out there? Like, did he have another match scheduled? We don't know. There was a lot of weird pacing stuff on Raw, but you know, Ricochet versus Eric Young was an interesting choice because, you know, Sanity has just been sitting in their closet backstage for weeks and weeks and weeks, and to just kind of be like, oh, Eric Young, I guess. But I thought they had a good match too. And it was very much a highlight for Ricochet and not a highlight for Eric Young. But it was kind of like, oh, right, Sanity exists. We could maybe do something with these members of our roster. Like, would I have preferred it be Ricochet versus Killian Dane? Of course, because Eric Young is the least interesting member of Sanity to me. But I thought it made Ricochet look great. The number of times they mentioned Paducah, Kentucky on SmackDown just warmed my heart because I kind of love that city. And it was just strange. Like, I don't know if Corey Graves just thought Paducah was a funny word and just kept saying it. But yeah, I thought he looked great. And DIY beating the bar, like DIY versus the bar a week ago. Did you think that match was possible, Kenny? Because I didn't. And I got to see it. And Antonio Cesaro versus Johnny Gargano is straight from my hopes and dreams. And DIY looked great. And so, again, like, I understand people's valid criticisms of, you know, things being haphazard and some of the pacing being weird. But it seems like they're finally taking a group of NXT call-ups who deserve to be on the main roster, who deserve to be on a big stage, treating them like world-class stars and featuring them prominently. So this is kind of everything I've wanted. I think it's a big bummer for people like EC3 and Nikki Cross, who have been sitting in the background, and Nikki's just kind of been losing to some people on Raw, and EC3, I assume, is posing in a mirror in a closet somewhere. We don't know. We haven't seen him this week. So it's a bummer for some performers who might get lost in the shuffle because they're not the latest and greatest new shiny toys. So I guess we'll kind of have to wait and see, but it's one of those things where I think they've been doing NXT call-ups so poorly for so long that this feels like a step in the right direction. And unfortunately there are going to be growing pains with this kind of situation. And, you know, having EC3 and Nikki Cross not be part of this group, Nikki Cross especially, because obviously, you know, she's one of my faves. Like, it'll be interesting to see what happens and what comes of it, but it feels like a positive direction.
Yeah, I mean, there is going to be growing pains and all that kind of stuff. You are right. A couple of things I would just say about the whole call-ups is that you're right. Like, Nikki Cross and EC3 and all these people have come up at a difficult time. And I've been talking to some people today on, like, the Facebook community and stuff. And, you know, people are quite rightly saying, look, this is not very planned out. It's not long-term, blah, 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 blah. But Stephen Ross, actually, I think, really nailed the situation better than anybody else, because he doesn't really seem to have a bias towards WWE or towards New Japan. And I would say, like, we probably do have a slight, like, me more than you, but, like, we're more invested in more characters there than we are in New Japan, so there might be a bias in our critique of it, right? Especially with your love of NXT and my enjoyment of WWE. But
yes.
Steven said, if you think about it, WWE is like The Simpsons, and New Japan is like BoJack Horseman. That was the thing he said. And I actually want to read this full comment, because I think it makes sense in regards to what he's saying. So he said, I think a better metaphor is this. WWE is The Simpsons, New Japan is BoJack Horseman. At their best, both can tell fantastic stories. One is more complex and the other is more easily digestible. One has a more consistent quality as it is more finely tailored, while the other has a mass market appeal. Kids get The Simpsons, but will struggle with BoJack. I think that's a good example of the kind of differences between. So, you know, maybe I give WWE an easier time of it. But with the call-ups, I think these January call-ups are kind of in a tough spot, because they were never going to be needle pushers. Those people, like Nikki Cross, as great as she is, was always going to be somebody who was built up over time. Mm-hmm. To me, anyway. EC3...
Well, yeah.
EC3 kind of similar. Obviously, their big one was Lars Sullivan. That was the one they planned. They had a WrestleMania match with Cena ready for him. He got anxiety. He's dealing with his issues. We all hope he gets through them.
Yes.
Because, you know, I wish the guy the best. Now, the thing that frustrates me a little bit about these call-ups is that, yes, it's last minute, but Vince is finally reacting to what everybody's annoyed about. People, the Raw mid-card's stale. The there's not enough over guys in the main roster. So he's brought up the four guys. Now, I need to be careful when I'm talking to you about this next part. I've watched back the Gargano and Ciampa stuff from Raw and SmackDown.
Uh-huh.
Because I wanted to watch it again and just see. And I actually think they are sticking to the story on NXT. It's more subtle, and you're totally right. They should do a segment to bring other people into it. But if you watch NXT, I feel like Gargano especially does enough stuff that is in keeping with the story. Like, it's always Ciampa going for the, hey, it's you and me. And Gargano was very hesitant about it.
Well, and that was on Raw, that was indicated, right? When Johnny Gargano was hesitant to kind of like raise his hand after the win and stuff. I think on SmackDown, they were a little bit more buddy-buddy. And I mean, like, breaking the fourth wall here, but we're recording this significantly after we recorded the beginning of this podcast, and so I have seen NXT in the middle. And that's going to lead to some very interesting things, because do you know what happens on NXT?
I do, so I can tell you now. Because we will talk about this in Yellow Ropes Forever, so Patreon plug,
patreon.com/InsideTheRopes.
That was the match they filmed two endings for.
Yes, that's exactly what I figured.
And Johnny Gargano. But now what I'm going to say to you, I know, and it's a shame because there's a couple of things I really want to talk to you about and I can't, and I think you're going to get spoiled on them and there's no real way around it. What okay. I will say is that stuff happens in the next 3 weeks in NXT with Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa. I'm not giving away what it is.
Okay.
But it will affect how, at a certain point in the story, their main roster story is told. There's okay. no way around it. There's zero way around it. So I'm intrigued as to how that goes, because I can't see Triple H telling the story he's telling in NXT. I think it's the March 20th episode where there is developments that will mean that the main roster sort of mirroring has to be altered slightly in some way.
Okay.
So I'm curious how they deal with that. They also had somebody else show up in NXT to advise that they, who have a title, saying that they're going to be defending on NXT, which was not the case before, or anything that we thought was going to be the case. So they're making changes in NXT, and I'm very interested to see how they adapt to it on the main roster. So
because they just taped those episodes of NXT, was it yesterday?
Last night, yeah. So
last
so they,
night.
So they are
reacting to the call-ups now, and they are kind of fixing the story. And that's the thing. Like, that's what we talk about when we say that there are going to be growing pains, and there's always going to be this odd transition time. Like, things aren't necessarily going to be perfect. I think I'm willing to give them more leeway in this situation than I would be normally, because, you know, like, not trusting WWE's storytelling is kind of a smart way to go a lot of the time, right? But it seems like they're really trying to make a positive step in the right direction and give fans more what we want. Like you say, they're bringing up the top stars from NXT and they're pushing them to the moon, and they feel like they're very prominent. And that feels like such a big departure from the way Vince McMahon has handled NXT call-ups before, that like it really does feel like there's some change in the air, right? And it's one of those things, like, it could bomb. It absolutely could bomb, but it could be a better direction for the company as well. And I would say I'm kind of cautiously optimistic at this point is where I'm choosing to remain, because I don't want to be like, this is the greatest thing in the entire world. Like, of course, I enjoyed seeing the NXT people, you know, featured prominently on television. Well, that's great.
Do me a favor. Name three acts that have come up from NXT that you've been very disappointed in the handling of. As an example, any three, and I think I can make the point that I would like to make about it.
I would say Bayley. I would say Tyler Breeze. I would say Sanity.
Okay, so I think the Bayley one's going to be harder for me to do. At the beginning, they did try with Bayley, and uh-huh. then they kind of fell off a cliff, right? But with Sanity and Tyler Breeze, when they came in, they, from day one, were never presented as a threat of any kind. Whereas on these two shows, you know, somebody had said on the Facebook community, I can't believe Aleister Black's beaten Elias. He's beat one of the most over guys on the show on day one.
I mean, wasn't Elias just in like an Intercontinental Championship program fairly recently with Seth Rollins?
Earlier last year. But he's been all over the show. He's a very over part of the show. DIY, or Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa, whatever you want to call them, they got big wins over two very influential teams.
One of them being tag team champions.
Ricochet's wins weren't as big, but he was positioned in a way that he was getting wins. So to me, it's kind of, I mean, look, I don't want to tell people how to watch wrestling or how they should enjoy it. What I would say is, if you are not in any way excited about these four guys getting called up, I just don't know what else they're going to be able to do for you. They are shaking stuff up. This is the best that we're going to get of Vince reacting to the critiques that everybody has about the product that he puts out there. You know, you're going to have these four guys who I assume are going to be on NXT up to take over New York or take over Blacklist or whatever it's called. But does that mean they're also going to be on WrestleMania? You've got to assume so.
You would think so.
So, you know, there's a lot of stuff in play, and I think that's exciting. And you go back and watch the Attitude Era. And look, I'll argue with Sandra a lot on the Retro podcast about, I think there are shows that are really good, even if some of the stuff doesn't hold up as well now. And I still maintain, there's a reason that 10 million people or 5 million people watched the show, because they were really fucking invested in what was going on. Even if it is DX, right, which over time has aged horrendously. But at the time, they were a big fucking deal. They were a part of what the pop culture was at the time. And I think that I felt like Monday's Raw, for example, was kind of like an Attitude Era show. Where
it felt very much like an Attitude Era show, bad pacing and all. Like it, and that's not even necessarily a criticism, but it felt very much, it was haphazard. And I mean, wasn't it the script for Monday wasn't finalized until 30 minutes after the show had started? So they were really flying by the seat of their pants there and really trying to, you know, get stuff done with rewrites and figure out what was happening. There's a reason that show was so frenetic. SmackDown, I think, was a little more coherent than Raw was. But it did. It felt Attitude Era. It felt like, okay, we are reacting to ratings. We are going to throw something at the wall. And this time there was no miscarriage involved. So,
I would much rather throw something at the wall and react to what's going on. Like, 3 months ago, they were not reacting and they were putting Baron Corbin out there for 30-minute wrestling matches. So, they're reacting now. And I think that to, and look, I'm not saying that,
it feels like they're trying. And I think that's the exciting thing. And I think for all of the people, for everyone who has qualms about the way the call-ups were handled, and like, if you don't think that a win over Elias is good enough or something like that, you have to remember it's still week one too, right? Like they came in, they made a big splash, they got some wins, and where they go from here is going to determine whether the call-ups are successful or not. But they're setting them up for success. And it feels like the first time that that's really happened.
Exactly, and I think that in week one to judge it, I mean, Sammy Walsh...
In a while, anyway. They have set other people up for success. Like, Kevin Owens was set up for success, but you know what I mean.
I mean, I really call bullshit on Kevin Owens being a failure. Anyway, like, come on. Like, he might not be... Like, I think it's sometimes you think failure means that the guy is not the consistent main eventer of every pay-per-view. But Kevin Owens has done, like... I remember when I interviewed him in August, and I was like, you know, you've done all this stuff. You know, you had this six-month reign as world champion... You, like, headbutted Vince McMahon. You main evented a pay-per-view against Shane. Like, he's been involved in a lot of high-profile stuff. So I don't consider him a failure.
No, I wouldn't consider Kevin Owens a failure at all. I mean, I'm intrigued to see what happens when he comes back. I've enjoyed his little cell phone promos that we've been getting lately on Raw and SmackDown. I think they've just been kind of a delight.
Yeah, so for me, I think that Samuel Wallace also made a good point where he said, you know, the main roster right now does nothing better than moments. But he's struggling to see why people are saying, you know, WWE is the storytelling promotion. And this is a whole other discussion that we should probably get into another time. But I think there's a really good discussion in why, like, as an example, the Macho Man Elizabeth storyline from 1988 to 1991, you can't do a 3-year story anymore in this climate in WWE because they are the mass appeal market. They are the mass appeal churn. So I think there's got to be a middle ground that they can reach good moments and have some story. I mean, the Becky Lynch thing, that's a story that's been going 6 months, 9 months, and it's been really good.
Well, it seems the best stories they tell are the accidental ones that form organically, right? Because they tried to tell a story with Roman Reigns. They tried over and over and over, but it didn't click with the audience. And that's what we always talk about, wrestling being kind of give and take between the audience and the company. And if... You know, if the audience isn't invested in a thing, or if the audience doesn't see your big hero as the big hero, then you have to react and grow and change. And it feels like WWE is actually reacting and growing and changing and being forced into a corner where they have to try more and they have to try more different things. And I think that's the thing that's most exciting for me about this time in wrestling right now with AEW and with, you know, WWE reacting to the ratings, you know, amping up toward the Fox deal later on this fall. There's a lot going on, and there's a lot of change happening, and there's a lot of change in NXT happening, and there's a lot of change in the main roster happening, and it's just it's kind of an exciting ride. There's a lot of change in New Japan happening. There's, you know, there's so much going on, and it feels like different stuff could happen. A lot of things that didn't seem possible even, you know, like 3 months ago feel like they're possible now, and that's exciting.
Well, let's move on to a big story, something that you actually spoiled for me, which is a rarity. Where on SmackDown, Asuka comes out, she wants some competition. Dasha Fuentes, aka the Robot, was asking her, you know, people are concerned about Ronda Rousey, what do you want to do? She's ready for new opponents, ready for a new challenge. Out comes Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville. Then Asuka and Mandy have a match, goes about 10 minutes. I thought Mandy did pretty well. I don't think she was amazing or anything, but she did fine. I think I'm willing to give her more leeway because of Elimination Chamber. But eventually we get to a point where it all kind of falls apart, and Mandy Rose shoves Asuka into the ropes and rolls her up and pins her with the Sonya Deville kind of distraction, and Mandy gets the pin in like 10 minutes, which we assume is going to set up Mandy and Asuka at Fastlane. So talk me through your thoughts and how this played out in execution.
Okay. I know that we don't have like a ton of time right now, so I'm going to try and be succinct. It's going to be difficult because I was not very happy about this. So when Asuka asked for new challenges, I would have really liked her to get a new challenge, right? Like Mandy Rose is not a new challenge for Asuka. Asuka has beaten Mandy Rose handily before. I know it's been a while since they had a singles one-on-one match. I think it was like May of last year or something like that. I can't remember. I tried to Google it, forgot. But Mandy Rose is not a new challenge for Asuka. Asuka's been basically beating like everyone on the SmackDown women's roster for a long time. I think Lacey Evans would have made more sense here, actually, because she is someone who Asuka hasn't faced. I think Nikki Cross would have made sense here because Nikki Cross and Asuka have faced each other, and Nikki Cross has taken Asuka to her limit in NXT, right? Like their last women's standing match was awesome. So when she asked for a new challenge and Mandy Rose came out, it was just kind of underwhelming in general. Mandy Rose is not my problem here. Like, I actually quite like Mandy Rose as a performer. I think her wrestling has gotten better. I think she is not like, you know, Becky Lynch or Charlotte Flair level, but she has actually, like, she's grown a lot in the ring, and I think she's gotten significantly better, and she's kind of really coming into her own as a character and as a wrestler. So I commend Mandy Rose for her progress on that. But the problem is that I don't think that anyone really believes that Mandy Rose can beat Asuka. And it's just, it's reminding me of the times when I don't think anyone really believed that Carmella could beat Asuka, right? And she did, and she beat her multiple times. And this just seemed like a little bit more, too much of a flashback to that for me, where it, like the distraction finish was awkwardly executed, and like it just makes Asuka look like an idiot, right? Because Mandy's like, "Ow, my eye, it hurts so badly." And Asuka's still trying to go after her, and the ref is kind of keeping them apart. But then Mandy is like, "Oh no, whoops, I was just kidding, put you into the ropes and then pin you off of nothing." And this is, I mean, part of me thinks that maybe it's time to let go of Asuka being so undefeated in NXT and, you know, just treat Asuka like she's the performer that she is now. But it's hard because Asuka was the one who was so resilient, and Asuka was the one who could kick out of anything, and she was always taken to her limit. It wasn't like she was a monster. She wasn't a Brock Lesnar type monster who would just like kill you, but she was the one who could absorb damage and kick out of everything. And so to lose to a distraction roll up just seems unbefitting of Asuka as a performer. And it also, like, we've just gotten to a point where Asuka's kind of recovered from the whole Carmella saga and from feeling like just another person on the roster, and Asuka getting pinned by a distraction feels like she's just another woman on the roster again, and that's just kind of a big bummer for me. On the other hand, I understand that the women's division is not very strong and they need to build contenders. I'm the same person who was raging that Ruby Riott didn't get more of a match with Ronda Rousey, because you need to build stronger contenders and you need to make more women feel credible on your roster. This is a way of them trying to make Mandy Rose feel like a credible threat to Asuka and feel like a credible contender on their roster. And so I understand what they're trying to do. It's just, for me personally, I want Asuka to be treated as more of a special entity. We run into a problem because who does Asuka face then, right? And that's just the constant conversation that we don't have time for right now, of needing more women on the roster in general and needing more of a division up around Asuka, so that if Becky, Charlotte, and Ronda are off in one corner, Asuka's the odd woman out, and who does she face? So I don't know. The whole thing just kind of left me with a bad taste in my mouth, because I don't want Asuka just to feel like another person on the roster, and it just kind of was a bummer to me. But I mean, I guess at least they're trying to build up another contender, so I'm not as like raging, throwing a strop about it as I probably could have been. I'm trying to be more zen about these things and see where they go, but it irked me. How did you think, or what did you think about it?
I think it was better that I found out before I watched it, because I think if I'd watched it like dark, I'd have been like, what the fuck? It's a tough position. Everybody who is angry and just is like, you know, I want Asuka to be the killer, I totally get it. There is not enough good women in that division wrestling-wise to have her be a killer. There just isn't. I wish there was. I've been screaming it for a year. Everyone from the talentless fucking hack that is Lana to the mediocre people, there's just not enough people. And not enough people are good. And I think if Mandy Rose hadn't had quite a good outing at Elimination Chamber, I'd have been more annoyed. The problem is, you know, I don't think Asuka should be defeated all the time or anything like that, but they chose to have Mandy Rose get a fluke pinfall. I don't think it was executed very well, but I get why they did it. They did it because they want to do a match. They want Mandy Rose to have something. It's not the most original booking in the world. It's pretty lazy, but I'm okay with it, because, like I said, on whatever, I think it was the Elimination Chamber review, Asuka is above everybody else, but on the same level as Becky, Charlotte, and Ronda, but can't go near any of them. So she's in this weird place where she can't really be with anybody else. So they have to do something. They've done something. She's going to face Mandy. I assume she's going to beat her. I don't know what she does at WrestleMania. I'm even more curious about that now. There was talk of it being Lacey Evans, but they're probably not going to go that way. I mean, I love Lacey Evans with every fibre of my heart. But she's basically Victoria Beckham, but from the 50s and blonde. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not as annoyed about it as I maybe would have been a few months ago. I don't think it is the same as the Carmella thing, because the Carmella thing went on so long. Like, I feel like this is going to be Mandy got the upper hand, Asuka's now going to murder her. And if that's what it is, I'm fine. If Mandy Rose's pinning her like 3 or 4 times, then I'll have a problem with it. But I just hope she murders her at the pay-per-view. So that's kind of where I am.
Yes, that would be ideal.
We did get a Charlotte Flair promo where she was, you know, again, being a beautiful prick. But the main event of the show was a six-man tag, Kofi Kingston, AJ Styles, Jeff Hardy against Brian, Joe, and Orton. Can I tell you my favourite bit of this match?
What?
Kofi Kingston got to shout at Randy Orton that he's stupid.
He did.
And it's been 10 years in the making.
So good.
Like, what a callback. It was so good. And, you know, everybody going into this was talking about how they really want Kofi to be the guy who gets the shot at Fastlane. Kofi gets the pinfall on Brian with the Trouble in Paradise. This brings out Shane, says it was an amazing match, and announces Brian and Kofi at Fastlane. And New Day celebrate with him. What did you make of the main event, the way they structured it? Shane coming out at the end to kind of announce who the winner is, or to who gets to go into Fastlane, and just the whole way it played out?
I loved this main event. I thought it was great. I think everyone kind of played their role properly, but it was the Kofi show, right? And I mean, 2 weeks ago, did we think Kofi Kingston was going to be the most exciting star on SmackDown? No, we did not. But he is, and it's great. And Kofi Mania is running wild. Did you see Aiden English's tweet where I think...
Oh, Rusev had said Kofi Mania.
Where Rusev said,
exist.
Like, Kofi Mania is not a thing and it never will be or something. And Aiden was like, maybe he should call me, then it will be. I loved that. Burn for Made in English. But no, Kofi Kingston pinning Daniel Bryan is another really interesting choice. And after it happened and I was pleased and I was like, oh man, this is really exciting. I had to kind of sit back and think, like, why does Kofi Kingston pinning Daniel Bryan not bother me? Because Daniel Bryan's the champion too, right? And so he shouldn't be getting beaten all the time. And Kofi Kingston now has 2 pinfall victories over Daniel Bryan. Like, why does that bother me so much less than Mandy Rose pinning Asuka out of nowhere? And I think the reason is because it's, you know, first of all, Kofi and Brian is better executed. I think the wrestling is better. Mandy Rose and Asuka, like, it coming across as kind of an awkward, out of nowhere, I didn't really buy it situation didn't help. But also Kofi Kingston, like, for whatever reason, the magic of wrestling has made Kofi Kingston super, super interesting. And he feels like a credible contender to Daniel Bryan. And there are some just intangibles in wrestling that you can't explain and you can't manufacture. You know, like, Kofi Kingston feels credible. I wanted him to be Daniel Bryan's WrestleMania opponent. I don't think that's where they're going to go, because if they're doing the match at Fastlane, it's doubtful that they'll do the match at WrestleMania.
Can I let you know the rumor? Because
is the rumor?
So the rumor is, and it's not set in stone, WrestleVotes had said this, and I'd heard this rumor as one of the names. I actually would prefer this name over Kofi Kingston. Probably a controversial view.
Is it the Owens thing?
It's Kevin Owens.
Which, you know what? There's a great story to tell there, too. I would not be sad about that at all. Well, and I think that would be a great way to bring Kevin Owens back.
I've been thinking about the Kofi Kingston thing, right? And, like, I think this might be unpopular. I love Kofi Kingston. I love that he got the Elimination Chamber thing and he got the SmackDown appearance and this and Fastlane, and it's all great. But at the end of the day, I think what it ultimately would be is a loyalty run rather than a this is a guy we're going to go with run, which is fine. I mean, I'm not a huge guy on loyalty runs. They're not really what I would like. I mean,
it was kind of great for Mick Foley, though.
But his wasn't a loyalty run. I think he deserved to be world champion. I think he, like, legitimately was. Like, you know, look at it now. People think of Mick Foley as a world champion because he was. Mm-hmm. He really, Kofi Kingston, I think he would. It's not that he's not talented enough. He absolutely is. I feel like if he got it, though, just in the kind of climate of today, he would get it very briefly. He would lose it again. That's what it would be. And I'm not even saying that's the worst thing in the world. But if you've got a returning Kevin Owens coming, who people really want as a babyface and has a lot to offer as a babyface, I just think the long term with Kevin Owens is more there than Kofi Kingston. So I actually think if we get the Fastlane match and Kofi gets this big chance to shine, and then we get Owens at WrestleMania, that to me is a better fit of everything. But in saying that, you know, if Kofi won, I'd be very happy for him. I'd probably pop like a motherfucker. But I think long term, I think Owens would be my preferred choice. What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, I'm okay with either one, honestly. Like, it's one of those stories that I'm just kind of waiting to unfold because it feels exciting. I'm happy that we're getting more Daniel Bryan versus Kofi Kingston on any stage. And I've always been the person that, you know, wants matches to happen, not just at WrestleMania, right? Like, I want Fastlane to matter because it's a show, and it's a show that they're putting on, and it's a show that we're going to watch. And so it's
and
something
people,
like
I just very quickly, people say, you know, the pay-per-views between Royal Rumble and WrestleMania don't matter. If we didn't have the pay-per-views between Royal Rumble and WrestleMania, we wouldn't get this Kofi Kingston story.
Yeah, exactly. And I think this year they're actually using the pay-per-views a lot more effectively than they have in years past. And there are two of them, which feels like too many. But at the same time, it's giving us some great storytelling. And it actually does feel like these pay-per-views matter because the WrestleMania card is not in any way developed or set in stone, right? Like there are only Becky and Ronda and Charlotte is, and Seth Rollins versus Brock Lesnar is. But other than that, like there's not a whole lot that's set for WrestleMania. So it's kind of an exciting time, right? Like I can't remember a WrestleMania in the past where it's been this up in the air. And it's kind of cool because it means that the weekly television is mattering. Things are happening. Surprises are happening. And, you know, we're getting this really cool Kofi Kingston story. To everyone telling me that there are rumors of Biggie Langston versus Kofi Kingston at WrestleMania, just don't tweet those rumors to me. Just don't do it because I refuse to acknowledge the possibility that New Day will break up.
Like, I haven't heard them, if that helps. I don't know where
that's good. Yeah.
This is the same people who go, there's a power struggle between Triple H and Vince wants all the call-ups to fail. You're like, does he though? Like, because he can't put them over huge
like
in the first
a dude
shows.
On the internet said that once and now everyone's reporting it, right? Like, Biggie Langston versus Kofi Kingston would be a great match, but I do not want New Day to break up. Like, I stand firm in the fact that New Day is a great faction, and I think that they can have singles runs and they can do things on their own without breaking up the group. I think the group is too valuable. I don't want to see any of them as heels. I love them together forever. Power of friendship. Yes, please. So I don't know, but Kofi Kingston pinning Daniel Bryan again is very interesting, and I'm all in on the Kofi Kingston story. If he won the world title at this point, I wouldn't be mad about it. And Daniel Bryan is my favorite. Like, I love Daniel Bryan with all of my heart. And at Elimination Chamber, I found myself cheering for Kofi Kingston. In this tag match, I found myself cheering for Kofi Kingston. Whereas I used to hate Kofi Kingston. I thought he was just boring SOS guy who didn't do anything, right? So it's just...
not Shelton.
Yeah, exactly. But no, it's great to see Kofi Kingston getting such a spotlight. He's such a talented performer. The two of them work together so well. I can't wait for their Fastlane match. I think it's going to be incredible. And I don't know. I am pleased overall with the state of things in WWE. There are a lot of nagging issues. The Asuka situation is still... I don't think it's like dead again. I don't think it's, you know, the worst thing in the entire world. And I don't want to be over dramatic about it, but I'm nervous about
it. I think if there was like five other options that are really obvious, I'd be more annoyed, but I don't think there is. I mean, the Nikki Cross ones, I do want to say Nikki Cross did do a promo for SmackDown that's been on the YouTube channel where she's saying, saying she wants to play and all that. So I'm glad they're still including her and kind of putting her out there. So, yeah. And like you say, Meltzer had said that the WrestleMania card is not set in stone. It's just the top two matches. And I think a lot of that's got to do with there have been injuries. You know, Roman's been taken out of the game. Ambrose is leaving. There's a lot of stuff going on that, you know, they're kind of shaken up. And 2000 was the most successful year that WWE ever had. And they changed the WrestleMania main event five times between January and April.
Yeah.
So I feel like I need to wait till it plays out. If it plays out and it's rubbish, then yeah, let's go to town and just say it was shite. But until then, I'd rather kind of let it play out. And to be honest, yes, Monday's show was paced bad. I love the absurdity of it. Give me heavy machinery acting like Bushwhackers and Lacey Evans coming out and strutting with them every day. Give me it all the time.
It's a lot of fun. It's definitely a lot of fun. And yeah, I mean, I think a place of cautious optimism is not a bad place to reside in WWE because we have definitely been in the doldrums of despair with this company in the past. And it feels like things are changing. So it's exciting.
So I wish we had enough time to delve into Hulk Hogan being played by Chris Hemsworth. I really wish we did.
I wish we did too, but I need to work in 2 minutes.
I'll have to do that on Power Slam Podcast with Finn. Anyway, Sandra, give us the plugs.
All right. Find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside underscore the Ropes. Check us out on Patreon, patreon.com/InsideTheRopes. Tons of bonus content, bonus Power Slam content, pay-per-view reviews, retro pay-per-view reviews, all that good kind of stuff. YouTube.com/InsideTheRopes for interview content, and InsideTheRopes.co.uk/Golddust for tickets to An Evening with Golddust at the beginning of March.
There you go. That is all of it. Who's going to play us out this week, Sandra?
I think we should play. It doesn't matter what I say. You just play whatever music you're going to play anyway.
So I forgot that you asked for Bailey. So in that case, I'm going to play Bailey, because the problem is when I don't edit straight away, I forget who you asked for. So here is Bailey for me to make up for my error on the Elimination Chamber review. Kind of meant it.
It does make me laugh that people are like, Sandra's going to be so mad he didn't play Bailey, as though I listened back to the shows.
Like that's the biggest Bailey thing to be upset about. Okay.
Right.
Here is Bailey's theme tune. She's back. She's a tag team champion. We'll see you next
Yay!
Time.
Bye,
Bye, everybody.